start.
You're in the limelight.
Assalamu alaikum. And for those of you who were here yesterday, you answer me, alaikum salam. And it's the peace of God be upon you. And peace be God be upon you, or the Lord be with you and also with you. So, salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Terrific. For those of you that haven't heard me tell a little bit about what I'm wearing before, this is the national dress of Pakistan. And men and women wear essentially the same thing, a shalwar kameez. It consists of a long tunic and underneath some baggy pants. The one I got in Pakistan, I had a drawstring in it. This one was made by a woman in my apartment house, and she's a pastor, and she's awaiting a call and is nervous, and she calms her nerves by sewing, so she made me this lovely outfit. On my head, I have a dupatta, and I have talked to Muslim women who said, yes, you must keep your head covered. I talked to Muslim women who said, no, you don't need to. In the Quran, it talks about the hajib, which is for both men and women, and that means only your face and hands show, but that is not one of the pillars of Islam. So I really don't know, but I think it's probably up to you. But what I do know is the chador, where your total women are totally covered and just a little bit to see out with the eyes. That started in Saudi Arabia, where the very wealthy women wore them so the common people couldn't gaze upon them when they were out in public. And then it became, okay, if the wealthy women wear it, we will, it's higher status. And somehow or other, it got to be something some people think is required. I haven't really tied in what I'm talking about with our theme. So today we're going to talk about treasure in a different way, and let's start with prayer. Dear Lord God, thank you for the children. Amen. And we'll start with the DVD. There are a couple on Pennies for Peace. I'm going to do the one of Westside Elementary where it started. At my expense, because I don't know about the rest of you, but do you hate to see yourself and hear your voice? Well, both of those. But I would like you to know the beginning history.
Let's give three cheers to Mrs. Mortensen as she comes and joins us here at Westside. Hip hip, hooray! Hip hip, hooray!
When Shereen Mortensen visits Westside Elementary in River Falls, Wisconsin, it's like stepping back in time.
Oh, it's so good to be here at Westside. I felt like I was home. You know, the assembly, all the children together. It took me right back to the first time when we had the assembly with the pennies.
In 1994, Westside students collected pennies for the first time. Jareen was the principal. Her son Greg tried to climb K2, but weak and disoriented, he stumbled into the Pakistani village of Korfe. There, he saw children without a school, and he vowed to give them an opportunity to learn.
Because I think he felt as though they had saved his life somewhat, because he was feeling so poorly when he was up on the mountaintop.
Jareen invited Greg to speak to the students.
First time I'd ever talked to anybody, adults or children, about the school that we were trying to get built in Pakistan. And I didn't go there to raise money. I went there, well, mainly because my mother is the principal.
You don't say no to her.
Greg came to our school and showed us pictures from when he was in Pakistan, and showed us pictures of the kids.
More we about her later.
The sticks in the dirt, and was telling us about how some kids didn't have school.
Somehow, he managed to inspire a classroom full of fourth graders.
It just made me realize that there's
not everybody has what we have, and I think we take a lot of it for granted.
The kids here are great, but they were so attentive. And, you know, out of that grew, I want to do something.
That something started with a penny.
We felt that everyone has a penny that they could contribute. There are, you know, children of all socioeconomic means here, and you didn't want to make it such that some children felt left out.
I just remember bringing like jars of pennies, and like everyone bringing in jars of pennies, and they, by the end of the whole time, there was just a huge amount of change. And it was
really cool.
That's how it started, because it was such a small amount, but it grew to such a huge, vast amount.
And they said, we're going to help you raise money for school. And, you know, I didn't think much of it, just some kids. And 6 weeks later, I got a call, and Westside School raised 62,340 pennies. When you think about it, it wasn't the famous people, it wasn't celebrities, it wasn't movie stars, it wasn't sports heroes. It was children reaching out to children halfway around the world, and they did it with pennies.
What is peace to you?
The teachers at Westside took the Pennies for Peace campaign inside the classroom.
Sam, it was a lesson in everything. I mean, we got our math and sciences. We learned about the Pakistan. We learned cultural differences. We learned basically everything you can about humanity in one aspect.
Postcard that's up here says, was sent from Greg to one of the first grade classes here in Westside after they had built that first school in Corfe. It says, Salam, hello from Pakistan, thank you.
When Greg came back with the photos and the school that had been built, it was like this light went on in Jamie that, Mom, those pennies built a school. They built a school at the movement. Now there is a song, a book titled Three Cups of Tea, a young reader's version of that book, and a picture book.
Corfe needed a school.
Teachers can download lesson plans and curriculum from the website penniesforpeace.org. Pennies have built dozens of schools in Pakistan and Afghanistan and purchased pencils and supplies for hundreds of students. Thousands of students in the U.S. and around the world now participate in Pennies for Peace campaigns. And it all started here.
Council met, and when the faculty met, that one wise first grade teacher said, let's have it be only pennies. And as they said in the DVD, that made a huge difference because every child was part of it. One of the kids that was part of it was Timmy, and Timmy lived at Hilltop. We have five trailer courts in our school population, and if you have, I hate to say it, but if you have one at the bottom, Hilltop was at the bottom. Timmy was a scruffy little kid. He was really needy. And every day when they were going to lunch, she'd stop in the office to get a hug from our school secretary and a hug from me. And he did that almost as long as I was at the school. But the last day of the drive, Timmy came in with a big jar of pennies. And the first grade teacher said, oh my goodness, where did Timmy get all those pennies? He was so proud, and he said, my mom put a jar out in the bar and all the guys put their pennies in. So it was just a big day for him. And as Greg Greg said that was the largest check he'd gotten up to that time, the $642. $642, yeah. And after that, adults started giving. But the movement has continued. I was just talking to Susie Isley recently, that first grade teacher, and said, what a marvelous thing she had done. And she said, well, no. And I said, probably every school there is has a fund drive. But I don't know of any other that has started a movement that $1 million has been collected, 100 million pennies. And last year there were 3,000 groups in it. This year, I don't know, it's gone worldwide. Last month, the school in Israel is now part of Pennies for Peace.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it does a marvelous thing for those schools there. That money goes so far. But it does something for our children here. I was in Grand Marais, Minnesota last spring. And one little kindergarten guy, 6-year-old, came up to me and said, I didn't have any pennies, so I took my dollar to the bank and bought some. And then he said, was that cheating? And I said, no, it wasn't. He said, well, what are they going to do with my pennies? And I asked him, what do you want them to do? And he said, I want them to buy 100 pencils. So 100 kids can write. Do you see how empowered he was? Mm-hmm. I'd like to tell you another little story about William, who was 5. This isn't about pennies, but William belonged to a church in Denver, and he was there one Sunday when there were some people from Lutheran World Hunger speaking, and they gave out little denim bags with corn in it. Well, William went home, and fortunately his dad was a landscape designer, so knew something about gardening. But William went home and planted that corn, and he tended it all summer. Every day he weeded, he started to overwater, but then his mom and dad helped him with that. Weeded it, watered it, and on World Hunger Day, his church, he came to school with this little paper bag and gave it to the pastor. And inside were 6 little ears of corn. And he said, I'm going to feed the hungry. Well, the pastor mentioned it in the sermon. And then he said, maybe someone would like to buy his corn. And one man in the congregation gave $1,000 for his corn to go to World Hunger. Well, William has been planting corn every summer since, and every fall in that church. He stands by this little table and sells his ears of corn. Little kids. And this is, I think, in our country, kids have so little opportunity to develop this sense of efficacy, the sense I can do it. How many of you here grew up on a farm? Okay, what was one of your jobs?
Watering the chickens, carrying water for the chickens.
Okay.
Well, I cheated. My dad was a preacher to farmers.
Oh, okay.
So it was like.
But I want. Yeah. What?
Michelle Corn. Michelle Corn.
Okay. What would have happened if you wouldn't have carried that water to the chickens?
Well, I suppose Mother would have had to do more of it.
but if she did, was your work absolutely essential for the survival of the family? Any of the others here who did something growing up, maybe as a little kid, that this was really necessary? Well, I'll tell my own story then. My kids don't like it, or they don't mind now, but they sure didn't like it before. But during World War II, my dad was in the Navy, and my folks had a mom and pop store and restaurant. And on Friday nights, when there'd be basketball games or something, they'd close late. And Mother often Saturday mornings was really, really tired. I got up, I was 12 years old, and did the breakfast in the morning. I waited on the people, I cooked the bacon and eggs, and it was no big deal because my friends who were living on farms, they were working harder than I did. Coming up here, we stopped at a restaurant in Yulin, is there a, someplace where the roads go off, and I saw probably a 12 and 14 year old working in the restaurant. And it brought back memories to me. But I think it helped a great deal to give me that sense of efficacy, that I can do it. And I think a lot of our kids don't have time. I'd like to tell you about some marvelous things some kids are doing. Zach Bonner, and I ran this off, thank you for using the interview. But this summer, well, when he was 5 years old, and heard about Hurricane Daniel, David, it was a D hurricane, and the home. He took his little red wagon and walked around the neighborhood collecting water for the hurricane victims. He ended up with 47 truckloads full. He worked at it and worked at it. And in 2005, he incorporated and became an NGO, and at that time, Greg knew about it. He, Zach had talked to Pennies for Peace, so he and Greg met, and Zach had one big question. He said, do you have to have grown-ups on your board of directors? And he lived in Florida, and they found out you don't. So he has one rule for his board of directors: you can't be over 18 years old. Well, that was his start. And then he got very concerned about the homeless in his area, and especially the homeless kids. This year, he took his little red wagon, and this picture shows it, and walked from Atlanta to the Washington, D.C., 668 miles. And it was to raise money for homeless children. Next year, he's going to walk across the United States. Yeah, and he says, these kids don't have a home, they don't have a safe place to sleep at night, they're out on the streets, not because they want to be, because it's out of their control. He's raised $42,000 so far.
How old is he?
He's 11 now.
Oh, oh my.
And he wants to raise enough money that they can build some apartments in Tampa, Florida, for children. And with the publicity he started to get, and if you want to read more about him, look up Little Red Wagon, I think it's Little Red Wagon Foundation.org. There were some kids in Fort Collins, Colorado, who did their Pennies for Peace for Pakistan. And they had gotten over $1,000 in pennies. And when they were going to take them to the bank said, well, we just can't handle that many. We don't have time for someone to count them. You'll just have to bring them down in small quantities and do it that way. Well, the fourth graders wrote a letter to the editor of the paper that this bank would not count their pennies. And three other banks said they'd be glad to take care of them. One of the banks said they'd send an armored car to pick them up. So the kids decided that's what they wanted. There is a boy here in Washington State, and I'm sorry, I don't know his name, and I don't know where he's from, but he got, his best friend was a really, really poor reader. And the other kids were ragging him all the time and teasing him about being such a poor reader. So he started a Pennies for Peace, but to use the money for tutors to help the kids who have problems reading. there's some kids in Oregon that had a Pennies for Peace program that they decided what they wanted it to do because, anybody here from Oregon? Oregon's in pretty bad financial straits, just like Minnesota where I'm from. But they were going to close down the branch library because there wasn't enough money. They raised their money to keep that library open. Of course, they didn't have nearly enough to keep the library open, but they had enough to shame the city council into thinking, yeah, we have to keep this library open if it's that important to the children. Just stories from all over of what children have done. I think I mentioned the other night, one of my favorite ones is a prison in Florida where the inmates are collecting pennies. Mm-hmm. Pennies to go to educate children in Pakistan. And I don't have reports, but I would imagine it's making a big difference for the men who are doing it. So as I said, this money goes a long way, but I think what's really important is that what it does for children here. On the other side, on the flip side of this, I spoke last spring at a very, very lovely kindergarten through second grade school in Mahumidai, which is one of the quite well-to-do suburbs of St. Paul, Minneapolis. And because there's a dangerous road or a well-traveled road right in front of the school, they run buses for every child in the school. I spoke at the end of the day. I couldn't get out of the parking lot or down the road for all the parents there picking up their kids. All these children had the privilege of being on the bus, and those buses weren't even half full. Mm-hmm. What's the hidden curriculum there? What are the kids learning? Maybe that I'm privileged and mom likes me enough to pick me up, but I think the hidden curriculum is really I'm not capable of riding on the bus. We had, when I was principal, I had one woman who came in and wanted to do something because her daughter had to ride on the bus where there were boys. No religious reasons, nothing, but, and I said, well, is anyone bothering her? Well, she didn't know because she hadn't ridden on it, but she thought if she did, that that would be a problem. So I think something like Pennies for Peace, where children can feel I am making a difference. The day after 9/11, the kids who had started the penny drive were now in middle school, and they all went to their middle school teachers and said, is our school okay? Our school. They were concerned about that. You know, it's mine, and I think most kids in the U.S. said, am I safe? This expanded where they were thinking. Sometimes, you know, we just do things for something, and I didn't think so much about it until the last few years, and I told you I'd tell you about Jamie, the girl there that was involved in the original. She's at Valparaiso University, and she was majoring in English literature. When they contacted her to be in this DVD, she remembered what she had done, got all excited again. She changed her major to social work. And it was right after this kind of thing. So I think it's just great.
I have a question.
Yes.
Something that concerns me, and I don't know how to answer it, is what do you say to the children when they I've read in the paper and heard on TV that the schools are being bombed, and they say, that's my school, that's where my pennies went, or they don't even know, of course.
Well, fortunately, what they can tell the children who have been in the pennies drive, none of your schools have been bombed. There was one that was threatened, that's a school at Lalander. And the Taliban came in and they threatened the two female teachers, and they had dynamite and they were going to blow up the school. The headmaster rode his bicycle 23 miles through the dark in the night to the commandant of that area. And the commandant there has daughters in school, not the same school, but he sent some of his militia down. And they killed several of the Taliban. They put the rest in jail until they'd say where they got the money. And they had gotten it from the mullah of the village, so the commandant jailed the mullah, and the mullah wouldn't talk. So the commandant said they'd kill his oldest son, which was huge, pretty violent. And then the mullah said they'd gotten it from Saudi Arabians, who were part of Al-Qaeda. So then the commandant kept some of his militia there. They right now are guarding the school with their Uzis or Kalashnikovs, or I'm not sure what they have, but they're guarding the school. And the two women teachers are escorted to and from school every day. Greg has been there just recently, and he said, really, it wouldn't be necessary anymore. There isn't violence there. Colonel Kalenda, who was, he's in the Pentagon now, but he was in that area. He said once the school was open and really running, the amount of violence in the whole area went way down. And just recently, some elders and some Taliban from Mullah Omar's area, I think it's a village right next to him, came to Kandahar School, Lalander School, and asked if Central Asia Institute wouldn't build a girls' school in their village with a playground. And what's kind of neat is I have a picture, I don't have it on my PowerPoint yet, of two Taliban swinging in the swings. The playground is important to them. And there's the big, well, I think I've said it every time I talk, that Islam does not say girls shouldn't go to school. The first word in the revelation to Muhammad, and if I'm going to be proper, peace be upon him, the first word is Iqra, read. And the first two chapters are all about how everyone should seek knowledge, including daughters and sisters. And Muhammad's wife was educated. She was a businesswoman. He was not educated, but she was. And so this business of saying girls shouldn't go to school has nothing to do. In fact, it's in directly opposing what the Quran teaches. And I think if someone asks that, that's an important thing we need to know too, because I would say most of us in this country think that Islam opposes education for women, and that's not so. Other questions?
Is there some other force then in some of these Muslim countries that do keep the women
tradition? No, tradition's a lot of it, and it, as I said yesterday, a lot of the Taliban came out of the refugee camps in Pakistan, where they had no interaction with women whatsoever. They have no skills, they haven't learned how to farm, they haven't learned how to do handicrafts, they haven't learned any of those things, and so they have no skills, but they can shoot guns. Guns are just a big part of that. Wedding ceremonies, they shoot off guns, and they do hunting and things like that. So they can do that, but all they've seen is war. So that's what they see, and frankly, they're afraid of women. They don't, it's like a strange group. And in the madrasas, a lot of times they preach, I hate to say, kind of like Paul did, that women can distract you from doing the work of the Lord. So, schools are going to make a huge difference. The St. Paul schools, the special education departments right now are wanting to do the whole district. And they would like to do something for the special needs children. But I think that's going to be a while before that happens. They say the literacy rate in Afghanistan is 25%. But some people say that 25% means you can read and write your own name. So it's going to take a while before they have schooling for kids with special needs. But almost all of the suicide bombers in Pakistan and Afghanistan are handicapped kids, either physically or mentally, and they have uneducated parents. So they go to the parents and who are religious but don't know the Quran and say, you will be doing a mighty thing for Allah if you destroy these unbelievers or these people mixing things up. Your son or your daughter will be a martyr. And they pay the parents also. But it isn't really the money. It's this uneducated person thinking, if their child does that, it will be something great. In God's, that's a very good way to put it. It'll be something great in God's sight. And so that's what most of the suicide bombers in those countries are. I don't think that, I have to ask Anne, but I don't think that's true in the occupied territories, because there's a lot of, there's more anger there and more hopelessness. One of the things schools do is they give people hope. There's something beyond the life they're having right now.
I'm here, Jereen.
Oh, okay, what, good.
I think you spoke about the hopelessness, that, and that certainly factors into the decision to be a suicide martyr, it seems. Less religious than sort of a desperation to, you know, seeing no way out of the situation. Another factor for, of course, you can't interrogate a suicide bomber. They're gone. But another factor seems to be that a vast majority, almost all, always, that individual comes from a family where a member has been killed or imprisoned and tortured. So they have a family feeling that their brother or father or uncle has been killed. Now they're going to do some vengeance.
Thank you very much. And it is different in Pakistan and Afghanistan. I think they do have this religious, suicide's forbidden in the Quran. Killing innocents, like women and children, that's a grievous sin. And here again, it's a reason schooling, education is so important. Educated mothers, especially, aren't letting their sons be suicide bombers in those countries. And it's really it isn't a command, but it's very dishonorable if you go on a jihad without asking your mother and without having your mother's permission and blessing. And educated women aren't letting their sons do it. It's probably the same in this country. If with the gangs, educated women in the cities aren't approving of their sons being in gangs. And one of the things I really like is there in Central Asia Institute schools, there are 5 ex-Taliban teaching. All 5 of them were shamed into quitting the Taliban by their mothers and told that you've got to do something positive for your people. And they've been a real force in building up the schools. One of them is teaching girls, actually. Mm-hmm. And he feels very good about himself and what he's doing. So I'm going to go back then again to the pennies, where everyone has a penny. Every child can be part of it. Timmy can have his mother put out a jar in the bar, and the men in the bar put money in. I found a penny out here. And
they eat pennies here, by the way.
Well, I'm not going to give them this one. I was throwing pennies for peace. I've got a really good friend in Williston, North Dakota, and she doesn't have really any school connection or anything right now. And she's got a penny jar at the top of her stairs. And so all her friends who come over are supposed to put their pennies in. Last year I spoke in Wilmer at Zion Lutheran Church. And it's a downtown church. They don't have a lot of children, but they had a penny drive there. And they decided that they would pair the children up with the older members of the congregation. Some of them had one, some of them had a couple. And every penny that the children brought in, these older people matched. Well, it did nice things for the pennies. But what do you think it did in the congregation? What were those children doing every Sunday when they came to church?
Relating to the elderly.
Yeah, they were looking for them, and they were, and it just has done a nice thing. And incidentally, the woman in charge of that, her daughter is the pastor of the church in Pepin, Wisconsin, which has lots of connections to the Hinderleys.
Yeah.
I think that's how I ended up here. So that penny drive, I got a great deal out of. That's about what I have, but just don't underestimate what a penny can do. And I think we really need to think about what can we do to empower our children in this country? What can we do to give them that sense of efficacy? I just talked to a friend of mine. They just took their son to college. And they, when they got there, they went and bought all the things for him. And the dad built him a bunk thing where he could have his desk underneath. And I said, well, what did he do when you were settling him in? Well, he wanted to go meet the other people who were going to be in his dorm and things like that. And dear friends of mine, I didn't say anything, but I thought, you're robbing your son of some opportunities. And I think the pennies thing just gives people opportunities. And well, as you saw on the DVD, the joy the kids have when they do it. So
I read about people that were throwing birthday parties for their children, and in certain, you know, circles, the birthday parties become kind of a status event. And so these parents told their children, gave their children a choice. They said, listen, we'll celebrate your birthday. You can either ask your friends to contribute to a favorite cause, and they had to identify what that would be, or you can just have a regular birthday party. And the kids always chose the cause.
Mm-hmm.
They always chose the cause.
There was one little Jewish boy that all the money he got for his bar mitzvah, all of it,
wow,
he gave pennies for peace. Mm-hmm. It was about $900.
Mm-hmm.
I think kids... Oh, and I'm going to tell one more thing. When I was supervising student teachers, one of the student teachers was a drama teacher, and he was a student teaching in North High School in Minneapolis. And some of you that know Minneapolis know North High School is in a pretty rough section of town. And they had a good drama department. The year that he was student teaching, they did The Wiz, and it was excellent. But when I went in to see one lesson, here were these kids working on reading fairy tales. And I thought, high school kids, and they're working on these plays and fairy tales. And then I was talking to Roger Mom, the drama teacher there, and he said, the students here have so few opportunities to give. I always have them work out plays on fairy tales, which they present in the elementary schools. He said, if you don't give, you can't grow. And maybe that's a motto for pennies for peace, too. So, any other questions? I'll let you go early.
I want to give credit where credit is due. It's true that Deb Baseman from Wilmer was a connection, but Karen is the person who, Karen Crowell, who was our to get elementary school teacher, is the one.
Okay, well, I didn't know quite how it happened.
Yeah, but
thank you, Karen.
Was there, right? Thank you.
So
I did hear about you from my brother-in-law, John Grauber, who goes to that church in Pepin. And he was trying to impress me because I was talking about education in the developing countries, and I know Jereen Mortensen, and I stood shoulder to shoulder with her.
And I just wanted to say, I'm changing my schedule. Do we have my schedule changed?
Yeah, I've got it right here.
Do you
want to
let us?
Yeah. If you've been looking at the schedule, Jereen is going to repeat Monday's session that a lot of people missed and do it on Friday, and then take Fridays and do it on Thursday. She wasn't teaching a session tomorrow. So
that's just going to be a discussion on what works in girls' education and why girls need, and if we have time, we'll even maybe get into should we have separate gender education in this country. And if we don't have time, we won't get that far. But just to throw something out, have you ever thought of one of the main reasons girls in the third world don't go to high school? They quit when they're menstruating. If someone could invent an inexpensive, reusable sanitary napkin, we could keep a lot of girls in school.
Wow.
And that's some of the kinds of things we'll talk about. Whenever that is, I don't know.
That's tomorrow.
And do you have a time?
Oh, it's 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, it's 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And is it here? Or?
Yes, same place,
okay.
Same time.
And that's going to be strictly discussion. And I do have opinions. When my daughter got married, her husband was Catholic, and he'd gone all the way through in parochial schools. And he said, does your mother have opinions on parochial schools? And so he said, my mother has opinions on everything. But I will listen to you. So thanks. And don't forget the power of a penny.
All right.